This episode of the Fastest Known Podcast is brought to you by Chaski Endurance Collective. Chaski is an online coaching business, and you can find them at chaski.run. Here's what makes them different. They've handpicked elite athletes who have multiple coaching certifications and then provided them with months of coaching training. There are some big-name athletes on their coaching roster, many of whom have been featured on fastestknowntime.com, like Corey Waltering, Devin Yanko, and Mike Wardian, just to name a few. They have over 20 coaches on the staff. The best attribute is their community approach. They harness the power of working together by sharing knowledge and experience and then fostering connection with the athletes. The group has brought the power of the running community onto a digital platform. Plus, they do a lot more than just one-on-one online coaching. They've got a weekly runner strength and yoga series happening now. They've had a handful of big events like the treadmill record race last year, and they're even planning some retreats and trips later in 2021. They've got a special offer for Fastest Known podcast listeners where you can get a free month of coaching when you sign up for any of their programs and mention this podcast. Just check them out at chaski.run, that's chaski.run, and learn more about this unique coaching experience.
Well, Hillary, what do you think? Are we going to start a new category for the fastest known skinny dip?
Yeah, although I was thinking this might be a nice calendar, FKT calendar edition for photos, skinny dip. We'll see.
That's a good idea. We could have different skinny dips each month of the year. That's brilliant. We could make some serious money on that.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, we've got some guests here to talk about it. So
we have Mr. and Mr. December. Indeed, we're speaking with Rob Krar and Mike Foote. Welcome, guys. Thank you for joining us.
Great to be here.
Hey, this is Rob. Thanks, Buzz. Hillary, great seeing you and happy to be on the podcast.
Well, excellent. Well, Rob, you're speaking with us from Flagstaff, Arizona. I think most people listening have heard your name. But quick reminder, you've won the Western States 100 twice, 14 and 15, the Leadville 100, and countless other things. I was looking on, as they often do, Ultra Sign Up. And a quick review here. I'm just going to do this super quick because otherwise you're going to get embarrassed and hang up. First place. Oops, here's a second. You slipped up on that one, Rob. But people can go in the written show notes and definitely see your bio. Kidding aside, you're a fantastic, fantastic ultra runner and outdoor athlete. And sorry, now I'm going to embarrass you, Mike. Pardon me for doing this, but the same thing for you. And actually, you guys have done some things together, the North Face Endurance Challenge, for example. But you're up there in Missoula, Montana, and you've got a lot of results for yourself. And, you know, from Schemo to ultra running, and you've been second at the Hard Rock 100 twice, third at UTMB, third at UTMF. And so, again, this could go on for the entire podcast, but we'll call it good at that. So thanks again for joining us. And you two are qualified for what we're really going to talk about, which is rim to rim to rim alt. So what's the genesis of this? Obviously, this is the route that sort of complements the well-known rim to rim to rim, but downstream, and of course, the big issue there is there's no bridge. So what made you guys decide to do this in December? It's a bit nippy.
Yeah. This is Mike. The rim to rim to rim alt, I believe, Buzz, were you one of the first folks to maybe establish or attempt this route? Is that correct?
I named it. Yes.
There you go. Yeah. So in a nutshell, the rim to rim to rim alt is similar in statistics and metrics, you know, a little over 40 miles, 11 or somewhere between 11 and 13,000 feet of climbing, depending on whose watch you're looking at. But beyond that, it's not very similar at all to the normal main corridor on the Kaibab trails in the Grand Canyon. A lot more navigation, a lot more route finding, much more rugged trail when there is trail, specifically on the north side. A lot of navigating and just following washes and, you know, not really much of a trail at all. And then, as you alluded to, the big crux of the entire adventure is not having a bridge to cross the Colorado River two times as you go out and back. And so, yeah, the route has been on my radar for a couple of years as something to aspire towards doing someday. And frankly, as we all experienced in 2020, it's, you know, I was going a little stir crazy towards the end of the year and looking for a fun adventure. And Rob and I have a long history of doing stupid things together, big dumb things together, all over the world, which has been really fun. And so I just got a wild hair one day and sent him a text asking him if he was interested.
And Rob, you're down there in Flagstaff, so that's a hour drive for you.
You know, I have a long history of running in the Grand Canyon. I've had some of my most magical days of my running career and running experience, and I've also had some of my most frightening and desperate days below the rim of the Grand Canyon. So I didn't take Mike's offer lightly when I received the text December 15th, and I slept on it. And the next morning, I sent him a reply, kindly saying no to his idea, wishing him luck, thinking I would either freeze to death or be incapable of making the crossing. But as Mike mentioned, I'm a sucker for BDIs, big dumb ideas, and I just couldn't get the thought out of my head. And a couple days later, I actually did a scouting trip to the South Bass Trail, made my way down to the river and got a visual on the crossing. And, you know, one thing to point out is on our scouting trip, it was a beautiful sunny day, maybe mid 50s at the river. And that really added to the calmness and confidence looking at the river. And I said out loud to my wife, Christine, our friend Buck, who made the recon as well, that if it's just sunny and warm on the day of the FKT, things will be okay. But it didn't quite turn out that way.
Oh, is that right? That's interesting. Well, this is you did this on New Year's Eve, December 31st. So Mike's from Missoula. I say, okay, fine. You know, he's crazy. He lives in Montana. But how about you, Robin? How were you relating to one of the coldest days of the year to jump in the river?
Well, give me some credit. Remember, I am from Canada.
Right. You're right. Good point.
However, one of my least favorite activities in the world is jumping into cold water. So, you know, it's interesting. It's a very, very difficult route. And in some ways, the crux is crossing the river on paper. But, you know, when it comes down to it, it was such a mental challenge. You know, waking up in the tent the night before where we were camping, being freezing cold in a minus 20 degree bag, that was difficult for me to wrap my head around jumping in the Colorado River just a few hours later. But you know, it was a calculated risk. I didn't have any fear of getting ourselves into trouble. It was really just the mental challenge of taking that first jump into the Colorado and making our way across.
So then what was you said not really the crux, like what would you describe the crux of the route is? Because I think honestly it would be, you know, doing it on the return trip, knowing that you had to do it twice.
Yeah, that's a really good point, Hillary. It absolutely was. I think the mental, just doing it for the first time, there's that big mental block, but having done it once and knowing what you're getting yourself into is almost just as bad. And, you know, I will say, I mean, this is an incredible route. And I just want to say the spirit of the route is so great in that you can do a rim-to-rim-to-rim crossing of the Grand Canyon and on almost any day of the year and not see another person out there. And that's just such a special thing. And, you know, Rob can speak to this at some point, but, you know, we both felt pretty rough at the top of the North Rim. I mean, you're going up into the snow. It's cloudy. There was a snow squall on the South Rim at that point. You're cold again. You're tired. You're hungry. You know, you got to go all the way back down on this non-existent trail back to the river and then take your clothes off and jump in the river again. And, you know, that second crossing was probably maybe a minute and a half longer in the water, which is just long enough to get us properly shivering on the second, take out where we're trying to put our clothes on and get our gear back together. And I think there's a video that, you know, Rob's wife, Christina took that was, you know, I'm just like stuffing things into pockets, but not knowing where anything's going. Cause I'm like umbling and fumbling a bit. And, you know, Rob's taken a while to, you know, zip stuff up. And yeah, I think that was probably the most exposed we were. You know, you're tired, your body isn't regulating temperature well. So yeah, that was probably the low point of the day in a lot of ways, but also great to have that behind us.
Well, then as Rob said, you're up there on the South Rim. It's cold. It's not warm up there in December at all. And you're thinking, wow, I'm going to go down there and jump in the water. And we should note that this is all dam release. So that's part of the research I did initially, which means the temperature actually doesn't change that much year round. So if you go down there in July, the water is still cold. But since it's coming out from underneath the dam, it gets a little colder in December, but it's going to be cold. So that, as Rob said, is very mental. Wow. But Mike, coming back, you have no choice. I mean, you're going back across that river or you're going to spend the next week over there because there's, like you say, there's no other option.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
One of the things we kidded about before making the attempt was the idea of losing our dry bag in the Colorado River and standing on the north side of the Colorado River naked and wondering exactly what we would do. And funny enough, we discussed about double knotting, triple knotting our dry bags to our P cord, which was wrapped around and tied around our waist. And funny thing, Mike's knot came loose and his dry bag started drifting away from him. Thankfully, in the calmer water on the north side, but our premonitions almost came true on that one.
What?
Yeah, that's my fault. I can tie almost any knot out there, and I just did a quick square knot, and instead of doing double fishermen's on either side to keep it nice and tight, I didn't do that, and it came undone. Luckily, I noticed last second. And to give Rob some credit, you know, talking about him being from Arizona and me from Montana, I'm the one who wanted to carry down heavy wetsuit or a heavy pack raft. And after multiple appeals to Rob to not skinny dip across the Colorado twice on this attempt, he just said, no, this is how we're going to do it. It's the fastest and therefore the safest way, which I often think that that speed equals safety when you're out there. And I thought in hindsight, I think there's no other way I would do it moving forward by getting rid of the weight of all this gear of something like a wetsuit or a pack raft. We were able to bring puffy jackets, small towels, things like that. And I would highly recommend doing it the way that we did it.
One of the moments that helped change my mind from the time I said no to Mike to the time I said yes was thinking about the river crossing. And, you know, I'm a very lightweight, minimal adventurer. And it wasn't speaking to me to carry a wetsuit down there and carry it back up and take the time to get in and out. And I thought back to my triathlon days, putting on a wetsuit and jumping into a cold lake. It was still really cold and it took a lot of time to get in and out of that wetsuit. So it was a very calculated decision or a thought process in running minimally to the river and very quickly getting undressed, swimming across, and within 30 seconds having a down puffy jacket back on our bodies. So, you know, from an outside perspective, it may look risky or colder, but undoubtedly it was the most efficient way to stay warm after crossing the river.
Well, Hillary, Mike just described how he didn't tie his knot correctly and the dry bag almost floated away, leaving him stranded naked on the other side. And Rob just said how he thinks that going naked into 50-degree water is a better idea. So, Hillary, you ready to go on an adventure with these two?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I thought that they just decided to do, you know, take the rim-to-rim-to-rim alternative route to the next level and, like, add sex appeal. That's what I thought they were going for, you know. But Rob was going to my
they did that.
Very logical side. But
okay.
Rob, we had many reasons for attempting this route, and some are less known than others, Hillary.
Okay. All right. Wow. This podcast could go longer than 45 minutes. That's fantastic information, seriously though. And as you mentioned, Mike, the route is amazing. The reason I named it that is this came up at the time where the Rangers and the Park Service was cracking down on rim to rim. What was happening is that Las Vegas running stores were doing tours. They're taking, you know, 40-person passenger buses to the North Rim and say, okay, we'll pick you up at the South Rim. And people were going down there who didn't really know what they were doing. They dropped, like, goo wrappers on the trail, which just horrified me. As, you know, any trail runner, to litter is just unthinkable. And people were having to get rescued by rangers. Maybe they'd poop next to the trail. And I was like, whoa, no, this isn't what we do. And so this, as you mentioned, Rob, is the same elevation profile as the Kaibab Trail, but there is no bridge, so there's nobody there. So that's how the ALT got its name. So thank you for describing it so well. And I would like to say, if I may, all kidding aside, that it's a serious route. You two are some of the best. I mean, literally. And so in case anyone's listening to this, do not attempt this unless you are as good as Rob and Mike. Because otherwise, this could get bad, and to be rescued by rangers isn't really what we want to have happen.
Yeah, agreed. It's not to be taken lightly. I think Mike and I are very, very comfortable with our ability levels and even our comfort with each other, understanding that we're both confident in staying calm if something did go wrong. But the last thing we want to do is put others at risk and in danger by setting ourselves up for trouble. So please think very, very long and hard before attempting to cross the Colorado River on anything other than the 2-foot bridges at the bottom of Kaibab and Bright Angel Trail.
Right. Thanks for saying that. Well, going back to that crossing, we don't want to run that one to ground, but heck, it's very interesting. Rob, you proposed something. So, that the quick change is safer. So you're saying, I think, Rob, that you're going to go down there, you're going to have your body heat going up, you're going to be high metabolism, and if you just go right in, you're going to maintain some of that body heat for the swim across. Well, if you stop to put on a wetsuit, which provides more warmth, and I should actually note a little more flotation, you think that is less safe because it takes a little more time.
I wouldn't call it less safe, and I wouldn't even describe it as maintaining body heat. I think the biggest factor is getting to the other side, having been submerged in sub 50 degree water for 2 to 3 minutes. It's really being able to warm ourselves up as quickly as possible. So one thought process was, instead of bringing a wetsuit, let's replace that volume and weight with a down puffy jacket. And also, I remember struggling to get out of wetsuits in my triathlon days. So to be able to have that puffy on within 30 seconds of getting out of the river, instead of struggling in very cold temperatures, it was about freezing air temperature after the crossing. That played a big role in making that decision to forego the wetsuits. And again, like you said, wetsuits do provide a certain amount of flotation and safety. And that went back to, you know, analyzing and feeling confident in our abilities to swim across the river as well.
Got yeah, you. Yeah. Now, Mike, are you a white...
Sorry, go ahead. No, I was just reading something about
Mike, are you a white...
hypothermia. And you, like, actually, the most dangerous part, as Rob just said, is, like, what, like, the transition time. It's like, maybe hypothermia can set in 50-degree water, like, in a matter of 10 minutes. But it's actually the combination of, like, the wind and the weather once you get out of the water that can actually sap you of more energy. So, yeah.
That makes sense.
Now, Mike, are you a whitewater kayaker? Because I've seen you down there on the Colorado River outside of Moab, I think.
Yeah, no, I am not a whitewater kayaker. I do have experience as a just whitewater rafter and raft guide in Montana. I've rode the entire stretch of the Colorado River on a private permit. So definitely know that river well, know rivers well and how they work and have a ton of respect for them.
Gotcha. Well, as Hillary said, there's metrics. You can go online and see the metric of the water temperature and the time before you start to become dysfunctional. But as Rob said, if you're a good swimmer, you can get across within that time. So Mike, with your river experience, you were convinced of the veracity of the let's just go for it style. And after having done it, do you still feel that's the best way to go?
For our skill sets, yes, absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
I'll add, there's a number of moments that really stick out in my mind and I'll remember surrounding this FKT, but the night before in our living room, Mike pulled out a pack raft and I was actually quite fascinated. I had no idea how small, light and compact they were. And Mike attempted to inflate it in a reasonable amount of time. And it was very, very obvious that that was not going to happen. But yeah, that was a fun moment in our preparation.
Yeah, that put the nail in the coffin of bringing the pack raft. That was the moment I knew. And I was really wishing we had that pack raft when we started our watches on the South Bass Trailhead and it was 7 degrees outside.
Whoa.
So, well, another sort of picture I had in my mind was I've never been in a pack raft. We're going to stick two people in it. And the chances of capsizing, I think, would be reasonable. So I pictured us, we'd still need to take all our clothes off, put them in a dry bag. So I pictured Mike and I naked on a very tiny pack raft rowing across the Grand Canyon or the Grand Colorado River. And I think that may have been the nail in the coffin for me, Mike.
Yeah.
That would have been a good picture.
Yeah, that would have been next level. I don't think I would have, yeah. I'm comfortable with you, Rob, but I don't know if I want to spoon you on a little pack raft across the Colorado.
I mean, you guys are teammates, so maybe it's just like brings it to the next level. But that's actually something I wanted to ask you about because both of you have done, you know, FKTs, self-supported or supported, but solo efforts. Can you guys speak to the team effort that was involved in this? Because I think that's hard. Because you're not necessarily, maybe when you're struggling, someone else is doing, doing better. Did you think that there, like, were there moments where you were able to bring each other up?
Oh, I'm so glad you asked that. I've been thinking about this a lot, and I was hoping we would talk about it today. I could be wrong, but I feel like the spirit of this route is to do it with a partner. When you're crossing the river, how removed you are from, or how far out there you are on the North Rim. Rob and I have had, like I mentioned earlier, a lot of fun adventures together, whether it's doing ski mountaineering racing here in the US or stage racing at some of the biggest ski-mo races in the world over in France at Pyramenta, being teammates on the North Face for years and doing a bunch of races together. It's such a, like, it just adds a whole other layer to the experience to have a partner when you're out there. Whether it's something as simple as just navigating well, like again, having spent a lot of time together, Rob and I aren't chit-chatting the whole time, we're just trying to move efficiently near one another. Some of us taking pulls up front at different times. I mean, there's probably 24 times where I would go off route and Rob would find the track and say, oh, this way. And so we'd were working together very well, and probably only a half dozen times where I was the one who actually told Rob to go a certain way. But you know, that aspect is huge. And honestly, I think I love doing things alone. I train alone all the time. I'm totally fine with that. But there's these special moments where you get to share in an experience, and it galvanizes that relationship even further. And you know, that's definitely the experience I had with Rob in this trip, was to be able to share in some big adventure, help each other through the low points, help each other stay on track and succeed together, just adds a deeper layer of like satisfaction to it, especially after a year. I mean, frankly, of spending a lot of time alone due to quarantine and COVID and not having those shared experiences as often. So for me, that was probably one of the biggest takeaways of this entire trip.
Yeah, I couldn't have said it better, Mike. I don't think this experience is something I would remember nearly as fondly if I had done it solo and run the same time. Yeah, it's fantastic. And I love the team aspect. You know, Mike and I have such a good friendship and relationship and understanding. I like to call it comfortable silence. We did a lot of that out there, just staying focused in the moment. And yeah, you know, another moment that really sticks out in my mind is approaching the North Rim. You know, overall 2020 was a rough year for myself, as it was for many others. And I would describe my fitness as slightly underprepared for this effort. So I knew I was going someplace that I hadn't gone in a long time. And with about a mile to go to the North Rim, we were getting into the snow level again. And I hit my lowest point of the day. And probably the most desperate I've ever felt below the rim of the Grand Canyon, being approximately 20 miles from any type of civilization or help. You know, there's nothing on the North Rim. You're 30 miles away from Jacob Lake. All the lakes are closed. And we still had to make our way to the bottom of the Grand Canyon, swim across, and climb back up to the South Rim. So it was a tough moment. And, you know, it was comforting knowing I had Mike there, even though I couldn't hop on Mike's back and he couldn't piggyback me back to the South Rim, but it was good. You know, we both remained calm. I regrouped, got some calories in me and managed to bounce back. But, there's something about having a friend out there that makes the experience all the more special.
Wow. This is a great conversation. I really appreciate this. This brings back, if I may, my same thoughts with Peter Backlund, my longtime partner, when we did this together, many other things. And when in the world of FKT, sometimes you get into this weird debate about solo, supported, unsupported, things like that. But really, when people write in, we always write back saying, do what works best, right? Do what's right. And you two are mountain people. You know what I'm saying here. You're not going for an FKT. You're not trying to find the soft spot and hitting it. You're trying to travel appropriately in the backcountry. And I really appreciated your words where, why are you doing this? Are you doing this to get a record? Are you doing this to have a great experience? And your experience clearly was enhanced by going with each other.
Absolutely.
Yeah, without a doubt. I think, you know, very similar to my racing, I never think about hitting a time or breaking a record in a race. And I approach this FKT very similarly. You know, if in my mind, and one of the reasons I feel I can stand on the starting line or stand on the South Bass Trail so calmly, despite, you know, the difficult hours ahead, is that if we move efficiently and in a smart manner, the time is going to work itself out. It is what it is. There's no worry about chasing a time. And I really appreciated that approach for the rim-to-rim-to-rim alt FKT, especially with the river crossing. You know, at that moment, I was confident with our decision to forego a wetsuit. Again, if we were smart and took care of ourselves, the time would fall in place. And it was exciting to follow that approach.
Wow. Wow, this is impressive. Well, you mentioned, Rob, that you've had some frightening and desperate things take place below the rim. but nothing like that this time. It sounds like, you know, you had a little bit of a bonk approaching the north wind, but other than that, things went well. Would you like to share some other things that maybe didn't go so well in the big ditch?
Oh man. You know, certainly one that sticks out prominently is preparation for the 2015 Western States 100 mile. One of my final training runs, it was about a 35 miler classic route down Kaibab, a couple miles out and back on North Kaibab, and then up the Bright Angel Trail. And, you know, lesson learned, I was nursing just a little bit of a niggle in my shin and was doubting whether I should go down or not, but I did. And I distinctly remember there's a sandy section connecting the Kaibab Trail to Bright Angel Trail. And this is, you know, late May, early June. So it's 100 degrees plus in the bottom of the Grand Canyon. Running through sand is never an enjoyable experience. I remember stubbing my toe and just lunging, and that movement of saving myself from falling triggered something in my muscle, and it got me to a point where I couldn't run and I was going to be walking the rest of the way. And I remember sitting down, my friend I was running with had gone forward, which you know, I probably would have done as well. But I remember sitting on the sand, staring at the Colorado River, wondering how in the world am I going to get myself back up the 5,000 feet to the South Rim. So that was quite a desperate moment. Thankfully, my friend came down and joined me for the last mile. But yeah, that was a pretty desperate moment, staring at the Colorado River with so much climbing to go.
Wow, that's a good one. I'm going to ask you in a second, Mike. But first, Rob, you just triggered something when you said you're looking at the Colorado River. You might have heard this. When was this? About 5 years ago, a very good female runner. She was quite good. She was running on the Tonto. I think she was connecting the Bright Angel and the Kaibab along the Tonto Rim, you know, a real reasonable route, but she somehow ran out of water. And you know how that goes. It's hot down there, except when you guys did it, but normally it's hot down there. And I think she saw the river and she went down toward the river. She went down a little bit of a cliff band, couldn't get back up. And she sat there on a ledge right above the river, could not get to the river, and died. And that's a tough way to pass. That's not fun. Hey, freezing to death, you kind of don't feel anything. But heat prostration and dehydration is not a pleasant way to go. So again, don't want to sound like Debbie Downer here, but it's a serious place. What about you, Mike?
Wow. Yeah, that sounds really, really horrible. Yeah. Can you remind me of the question, Buzz?
Well, Rob just gave
what are some of my low points?
Well, yeah. Or, you know, Rob just mentioned that he had a little bit of an injury, probably was going very fast and light, didn't have a ton of water, so he had to slog 5,000 vertical feet back up. And as you know, in the big ditch, if you turn around, you're actually going up. Well, if you go up a mountain, you turn around, you're going down. So, Mike, any thoughts from you?
That's why I live in the mountains, Buzz, because I can start by climbing and then by descending. It's such a unique experience to finish on the uphill. But I will say I actually do enjoy going uphill more than downhill, or at least I should say my confidence is more in the ascents versus the descents. So I appreciate that about the Grand Canyon and how you can just settle into a hard climb at the end. And are you curious if I've had low points in the Grand Canyon or just generally in life?
Anything you want to share, Mike?
just like Rob, I've had a lot of really hard days in either in, you know, the desert or in the mountains. And I think as long as we can be curious and we can learn from them, they can shape and inform how we move forward. And I think that's really important. I think that's my biggest takeaway of these really, really memorable low points. I think as long as we can use them as data points along the way to learn from and tweak how we handle things, that'll keep us healthy and safe in the future.
Okay. Well, Mike, you and I had a conversation a number of years ago, I still distinctly recall, is about ski mountaineering. And Rob, of course, has become very good at that. You're good at that and experienced. And I think our conversation revolved around ultra runners are very fit, right? So they got great endurance, but do they have skills? And so you end up with this interesting paradigm where an ultra runner can get themselves into more trouble than an average person because they have the fitness to bury themselves pretty deeply, but possibly not the skill set to get out.
100%. Yeah, I couldn't agree with that more. We have this ability to go deep into the mountains or to move really fast on skis, high, like going up and going down, maybe without the right skill sets. And I mean, I've learned that the hard way. I consider myself to be a great skier, but I've also I've been at the world championships in Switzerland and separated my shoulder and cracked a couple ribs. And I mean, the traumatic injuries that can come with high speed sports are real. I mean, we all know that. Obviously Hillary knows that. And, and you know, it's, and we have this ability to go far and go deep with very little. And while I mentioned earlier that like speed is safety, which I do believe in that, there's also an element of risk and exposure that comes with all the things that we do. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. I'll add to that. I started ski mountaineering back in 2012 and still utilize it as a training method. It's an amazing way to get in the mountains and be alone or surrounded by very few people. And Mike and I had some amazing adventures racing here in North America. And also what comes to mind is a 4-day stage race called Pyramenta in France. And on the very final stage, I took a fall coming down a slope with a lot of powder, and ski mountaineering, especially racing in a team where you have that team aspect, and you don't want to let your partner down. I was definitely taking some not unnecessary risk, but understandable risks. I remember being midair in this fall and feeling as if time had stopped and thinking to myself, okay, this is the moment where I break my leg. And somehow I didn't and made it to the finish line, but the risk of racing ski mountaineering became too great. And that was actually my last ski mountaineering race ever. And I don't think I'll race again, but I will continue to use it as a training tool.
Wow. I did not know that. What year was that, Rob?
I want to say it was 2016 or 2017.
Mm-hmm. And Mike, yeah. Are you continuing to ski-mo?
Yeah, absolutely. At the same time, I'm less motivated this winter due to obvious global circumstances with COVID. But yeah, for me, it's more of just balancing energy levels throughout the year. I think being a dual sport athlete is really great, and that both sports complement each other. As Rob said, I mean, I can't think of a better way to move through the mountains in the winter here in Montana, and I can't think of another sport that can get me more aerobically strong and efficient. Yet at the same time, I have a tendency, like a lot of people in the ultra endurance space, to overdo it. And, you know, by doing a full season of racing in the winter, only to jump into a full season of racing and adventures in the summer, you know, that worked out well for me for about 3 years. And then I had a couple of years of being a little bit more inconsistent because turns out you need to rest every once in a while. And so I think ski-mo is something I will continue to do because I just love the movement. I love the sport, but I'll probably do it more judiciously and in the competitions and the objectives I choose.
I got it. And it does have that subjective nature, if I may add. I mean, if you're on rock, there's a certain stability, there's a certain experience and skill level that can be engaged. But when you're on snow, the snow can move. As you know, that's called an avalanche. And unlike in Hollywood movies, you can't outrun an avalanche. So there's this added, if I will say so, danger to being in the mountains in the winter.
Absolutely. It has to inform every single thing you do in the backcountry, and you need to be incredibly well-educated and experienced to really play in the mountains and expose yourself to that.
Well, Hillary, someone made a little allusion here. What thoughts are entering your mind here? Like, I'm going to ask, because your thoughts are certainly going through your mind when we're talking about injuries in the mountains.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I actually think I realized from an early time in my career that the skills necessary to kind of like race schemo, like what Rob and Mike do, it was kind of not in my wheelhouse. Like I grew up skiing, but on, you know, going on skinny skis down kind of like techie things in Colorado or, you know, in a place like Europe. Like I've been to the Pyramenta course in the summertime and it's pretty gnarly terrain. Like I couldn't see myself skiing that. So I think I realized from an early time in my career that I wanted to focus on running. And now I'm a dual sport athlete, but more with cycling. And I'll use, you know, skimo for training, but I think it's a really big thing to consider of the technical skills that are required for different sports and if that can lead to unnecessary injuries or not. I mean, Buzz and I, we've been on, you know, bike rides and some adventures here in the Front Range this winter. And we've always had the conversation of, you know, when we're going over ice spots and, you know, it's just not worth the risk. And for me, especially after a huge mountain accident that changed the trajectory of my running career, but also just, you know, my perspective as an athlete, I always have that in the back of my mind. And I would much rather be able to do something to be in the mountains, whether it's on skis, my 2 feet or a bike, you know, for the long term rather than, you know, get too caught up in the competition or that spirit to kind of where the risk would outweigh, in my opinion, the benefit. But yeah, maybe some people call me soft now, but I just call it a wise perspective.
I think that's a smart mindset to have. I like to I describe my adventuring as, you know, calculated risk. And I think another way to describe it is I really enjoy and prefer what I would describe as low risk, high consequence adventures. You know, the Grand Canyon FKT is a great example of being very calculated in our decision-making. There's a very low risk of getting ourselves in trouble. And I think that's similar to why I decided not to ski race anymore, because ski racing, ski mountaineering racing to me is not low risk, high consequence. It's high risk and high consequence. Mm-hmm. And that crossed the threshold for me.
Well, Alex Honnold had that same observation. In fact, Alex, boy, if anyone should know, he should know. And he mentioned scrambling is like that, where it's very unlikely to fall. But if you do, you're going to die. So it's an interesting metric. So thanks for identifying that, Rob. Okay, you two. So what would you have to say to people listening to this podcast? I mean, Rob, do you want to say to people, come to the Grand Canyon, do this or that? And Mike, you got to get yourself ready for this because I'm going to ask you the same question here in a second. What would you have to say to people listening to this podcast? Here you go. This is it.
Undoubtedly, the Grand Canyon is a magical place, and I'm so fortunate to have it. What I describe in my backyard, you know, it's about a 90-minute drive to the trailheads, and it's a place that I hope everybody can experience. As Buzz mentioned earlier, it is getting busier and busier. And the consequences of getting yourself into trouble below the rim of the Grand Canyon cannot be overstated. There's very few places in the world where you can begin a run with 5,000 feet of descending. The risk of running out of water or blowing your quads out, which will mean a very long and grueling hike back to the top, it can be miserable. And there's something about people having their minds, they just have to get to the Colorado River. And while that is a pretty cool thing to experience, one of my favorite corridors or routes in the Grand Canyon is the Tonto Trail. And that is such an amazing loop down the Bright Angel, down the Kaibab Trail. Make your way about 2/3 to the river. You still get beautiful views of the river. And then you get about 4.5 miles on the Tonto, which follows the contours of the canyon. There's very few people on it. You make your way back up the Bright Angel Trail, which has multiple locations to refill your water bottles. That's a great, great, great choice to make. Be safe out there. And enjoy the magical experience.
Your turn, Mike.
Yeah, I'm just sitting here thinking, I think the big takeaway for me from this adventure with Rob is, you know, choose goals and objectives that inspire you. I mean, I appreciate everything that you and the whole Fastest Known Time team, you know, do. Buzz, like going onto your website and just like perusing other routes out there and, you know, digging into the, for this example, the Art to Our All and seeing what people have done. I mean, I think that's great. And you made a good point earlier. It's not necessarily about going and trying to get some record. It's about finding some objective that really pulls you forward and draws you in and inspires you and, you know, is still really challenging, but maybe you can accomplish it. Like, I think that's what's going to provide the most value for people's efforts. And I think it sometimes can get lost when people are just like, oh, this route or that route. I think, you know, ask yourself, is this a goal that really inspires me that I'm going to be excited about between today and when I get to the start line, whatever that is. And, you know, the Grand Canyon trip for me filled all those niches. It was a great sweet spot. And that's why it was such a valuable experience.
Anything from you, Hillary?
Well, this is what I love about FKTs is that it just allows you to be creative and to get creative. And seeing what other people do, it kind of inspires me to kind of, you know, get out of my own comfort zone. And yeah, just exploring a new place. So whether or not I have a specific route in mind, it's just kind of inspiring me to, for me in particular, be combining different sports and, you know, trying a new route. Or, you know, for me, it's like glacier travel in, you know, the Pacific Northwest with a partner, you know, like testing my skills in a safe way, but kind of leading to an awesome adventure. And for me, it's all about the process and leading up to that goal setting and then, you know, accomplishing it. And, you know, maybe it'd be a cool FKT in the process.
Well, thank you, Mike and Rob. That was exciting. That was interesting and remarkable words of wisdom. I kept writing things down, jotting down notes. Boy, people really need to hear this. So hopefully they did hear it because I heard it. I really appreciate you two. Thank you very much.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you for having us on and thanks for all your hard work. I think what you're doing is helping a lot of people get out the door and find different ways to push their bodies and their minds during a pretty difficult time in all of our lives.
Amen.